pastor sees your shirt, you're going to end up in a half an hour conversation.
That's why I chose a good time to connect with him, because he was headed to the sale.
Yeah.
That's why I wore it.
Yeah. Well, guys, thank you so much for coming. My name's Ryan. I'm the executive pastor here at Orchard, and you have wandered into enhancing online or digital ministry. If this is not where you intended to be, there's still time to leave. I won't be offended. But we're going to talk today about digital ministry and how it weaves in with our discipleship process and strategy. I'm an executive pastor, so I'm all about making vision real. So I come at things from a strategic standpoint. So if you came into the room today wanting to know how to make videos look better or how to make audio sound better, I'm not that guy. We've got those guys, but I come at it from a strategic standpoint of how do we use digital content and tools to be able to help people progress in the discipleship pathway. So that's what we're going to focus on today. But I'd love to start just by going around the room. Give me your name, your church, or the ministry you're with, and your thoughts about digital ministry in one word. And you set the front, Louis, so I'm going to pick
up. Okay, I'm Luke Smith. I work at Living Water Bible Fellowship in Alamosa,
Colorado. Okay.
And, it's difficult.
Difficult, yeah. Digital ministry is difficult. Mike, I already met you.
Yeah, I'm Mike Ronkelia. I'm not in a converged church. I'm at Mountain View Christian Church in Highlands Ranch. My better half is the one you just saw on stage, Jill. So I get to hang out with you guys. Digital ministry in one word. Man, that's hard. So far, great.
Great.
Yeah, I really love it.
Larry Riley, only moved from the southeast metro area to Greeley.
Okay.
With her daughter. We currently have the responsibility as digital ministry or church there. I thought it was interesting that headsets are separated online from church. So I guess just say online.
Yeah. Okay.
My name's Larry Hobbs. I'm with the Way Church Denver. Down in the southeast part of town. Digital ministry in one word for me would be new.
Yeah. Okay. So we got new, we got great, we got not sure how it fits, kind of almost.
Right, yeah.
And we've got somebody else said hard, I think.
Yeah.
I'm Jenny Hobbs, also at the Way Church in Denver, and I would say uncertain.
Uncertain, yeah.
Hi, my name is Mary Rose Lucarini. I'm from Encompass Church down in Parker.
Okay.
And I would say digital ministry is powerful.
Powerful.
I think back to Easter time in 2020.
Yeah.
And I think I binged watch all of my friends from Bible
all of
colleges.
Them. Yeah.
Services from, all of Holy Week.
Yeah.
And this is great. I've never gotten to see what all my friends, where they are across the country, and what their churches are doing. So I'd say one word would be powerful.
Powerful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely has that.
Joshua Tangeman. Crossroads Community Church in Pine Bluffs, Wyoming.
Okay.
Say connect.
Yeah. Good way to connect. Yep. You guys?
I'm Kathy Lewis, and we're at Green Aspen Church.
Okay. You gotta sit up front.
Okay.
No, just kidding. You can sit wherever you like. But we just went around the room and gave our name and what church or ministry we're with and your thoughts about digital ministry in one word. In one word. So I'll start with you.
Hi, I'm Victoria. I'm church planting in Utah. My husband was the funny guy on stage this morning.
Right?
So we've had everything from powerful and great to difficult to tentative to uncertain to, it's across the board right now.
I have lots of thoughts on this.
That's why I wanted to challenge us with one word.
You don't want to think of my word.
I'm Tracy Alexander. I'm the Director of Communications at Aspen Ridge Church in Evergreen. And one word, changing.
Yeah.
It changes all the time.
Very flexible, yep.
I'm Megan Nichols. I do the live stream at Aspen Ridge Church.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's good. All right, back to you for your word.
Lacking.
Lacking. What do you mean by lacking? I'm giving you more than one word.
Yes. I love the option of live streaming and digital ministry and things, but I think there has to be a goal in in-person service that is something you can't get on live stream.
Yeah.
So like the dichotomy of...
Yeah. Cool. Well, for those of you that came in, my name's Ryan. I'm the executive pastor here at Orchard. Being an executive pastor, my whole, in the business world before, my whole life and career has been about making vision real. So I come at things from a very strategic standpoint. So that packet you have in front of you is about formulating a digital ministry strategy. Hopefully it'll simplify and focus our thoughts around digital ministry, but hopefully it will also spark some ideas and encouragement for those who are tentative or a little uncertain, a little nervous. Hopefully what you'll get out of today is that it can be powerful, it can be great, but it takes work, and it's so much more than just putting our services online. During COVID, if you guys were like us, before COVID, yeah, we had our services online, but it was almost one of those things where if you couldn't make it in person that weekend and you were on vacation or you're out of town, you could always watch the live stream. It was really for our people to be able to continue to engage with our service when they weren't physically in one of our locations. During COVID, when March 11th, everything shut down, and we were shut down here to in-person services for 10 months. It became, oh man, we've got to figure out this digital ministry thing, because it's got to be more, thanks Aaron, it's got to be more than just putting our services online, because if your guys' experience was anything like ours, we went from measuring attendance to measuring attention online. And I don't know how discouraging that was for you, but it was very discouraging for me, because we went from seeing almost 3,000 people a weekend here physically to measuring 30-second views online and trying to be excited about it. Well, are the 30-second views going up or are they going down? And for a while they went up and then they went down and then all of those things. It was really hard not to be discouraged by the world of digital ministry. So what we had to do here at Orchard is figure out, okay, how do we make digital ministry something more than just putting what we do in this building out there online so somebody can access it when they're not here? How do we really truly make it ministry? And when I say ministry, I mean how do we reach people where they are and help them take a step in their relationship with Jesus using digital content and digital tools? So when we talk about digital ministry, I'm getting ahead of my slides. Sorry. So what is digital ministry? Is it church online? Yeah. Is it social media posts? Yes. Is it online groups and connection in that way? Yes. All of those things are part of digital ministry, but for the purpose of our discussion today, I'm talking about digital ministry in the context of it's engaging content and effective tools delivered to the right person at the right time in the right way to help them take their next step in their relationship with Jesus. When we think digital ministry here at Orchard, that's what we're talking about. Right content, right tools to the right person at the right time in the right way to help them grow as a disciple. So when we talk about digital ministry strategy, we're really talking about ministry strategy. Because what we had to come to realize, and I'm sure you guys have too, is it's not ministry and then digital. It's ministry that includes digital. So it became a part of our overall discipleship process, ministry process. So from now on, in-person and digital are completely woven together. You heard Ed, can I call him? I don't think I'm on a first name basis with Mr. Stetzer, Dr. Stetzer. You heard him on stage today talk about that church online really isn't church in the sense that it's more about content and consumption of content. And when he said that, I became a little bit nervous, a little bit deflated, because I'm like, oh man, how far is he going to go with this? You know, I've got a breakout coming about digital ministry right now. But I agree 100% with what he said. There's something about getting people together that is part of their growth, our growth, part of our design as a church is gathering together. There are several commandments in the New Testament, things we're instructed to do that you cannot do unless you're together. So all of those things woven together, both environments and next steps, into one cohesive discipleship strategy. And the strategy focuses on reaching people where they are and helping them take their next step in the discipleship process. Content and tools to reach people where they are and help them take their next step in the discipleship process. So I've got five phases of discipleship. Some of you are going to look at this and say, Ryan, there are way more than five phases. And you're right. But for the purpose of big buckets, we're going to talk about five phases of discipleship. We target people this way. They're not interested in church at all. It doesn't even cross their mind. Dr. Stetzer talked about, you know, what we call nuns. People, not Catholic, but people who identify as nothing religiously. They're just not interested in church or spirituality in any way. It's not that they're against it. They're not devout atheists. They're not devout anti-God. They just, and we see this in the context of the West and in Colorado, there are a lot of people who just aren't interested at all. It's not like the South. It's not like the Midwest even, where, you know, church and Christianity and Bible are just part of the culture and part of the upbringing. And you may not have gone to church, but you knew somebody who did. Here in Colorado, I grew up in Colorado. I came to Christ at 25 years old. I can say for the first 25 years of my life, I knew very few people that church was really part of their life. And I thought they were weird. But then God got a hold of me. And so you have the not interested. And then you have the spiritually curious. They're not just not interested, but they understand that there's something greater or more. They're just not quite sure what that is. And I think a lot of people in the West and in Colorado fall into that. That's why you see so much around, you know, nature and you know, all of these things where people are identifying with a higher power, an unnamed higher power or the universe, spiritually curious people. And then at some point, they make a decision to place their faith in Jesus Christ. They're a new believer, and then they go on to being disciples. And ultimately, the goal is to make disciples who make disciples. Here at Orchard, our mission statement is we are people helping people find and follow Jesus. So we are people. It's not the church helps people find and follow Jesus. The church is the people. Our ultimate goal is to make disciples who make disciples, the 2 Timothy 2:2 method. Any questions on those buckets so far?
In the non-interested phase, do you distinguish between people who are intentionally hostile or critical, and those
yes.
that are just what would you classify as nuns?
Yeah, absolutely. We part of our philosophy here at Orchard is we believe there are people who are anti-church, anti-God, and it's just going to take a work of God in their life. It's going to take some sort of tragedy, something that causes them to be shaken from that belief. So there's a fringe segment there that are anti-God. Then you have this over here who are church, and in our area, that's about 10% of the people are church. This big swath in the middle we call the unchurched or dechurched. And I know in this area we have a lot of people who were brought up Catholic, like Ed said, that was the church they didn't go to on Sunday, but they identified as Catholic. A lot of former Catholic, a lot of unchurched, dechurched. when we say not interested, we're talking about that unchurched, de-churched swath of people. So we're not out there necessarily, and we'll get into content here in a bit, but we're not out there necessarily trying to make apologetic arguments on Facebook or social media or in Google Ads to try to convince somebody who's an atheist to believe in Jesus. We believe that that kind of conversation is far more effective in the context of relationship. You put it out there on social, you put it out there in wherever, now, because you can take the love right out of the written word. No matter how loving you write it, it's about how it's perceived by the reader that makes all the difference. And out of the context of a personal conversation, you don't get to hear tone of voice. You don't get to hear or see the love in somebody's eyes as they're telling you about Jesus is real and here's what he's done in my life. So we believe that those conversations are far better done in person than they are blasted out across the internet. Great question. Any others so far? All right, five phases of discipleship. We're going to talk about our digital ministry strategy across those five phases of discipleship. So where we start is with who. And this is all in your packet. Who are we designing our ministry or our ministry content for? And the easy answer, and the one we all want to say is, well, we design it for everybody. Because we want everybody to come and know Jesus as their personal Lord and Savior. So we design it for everybody. The problem is when we design it for everybody, we're really designing it for nobody. Because what ends up happening is we speak in these vague, general terms, and we don't connect with people personally on an emotional level. So when we're talking about developing content, we have to understand who we're developing content for. And we'll get into personas here on the next page, but we at Orchard define what we call target personas. And so we boil down this group of people. If we could boil down a group of people that we want to influence to their next phase of discipleship into one personality, what does that personality look like? And this is in your packet. We call her our reach persona. We call her Brighton Betty. And we even have a picture of Brighton Betty because it helps us put a face to the name. And we've done a lot of work on who Brighton Betty is. So this is our reach persona. This is where that not interested and spiritually curious category that we're out there on the internet trying to reach in digital format. We're trying to reach Brighton Betty. So she's 30 to 40 years old. She has a high school degree or equivalent. She's biracial. We said 53% Caucasian, 47% Latino, because you walk in here on a weekend, over 40% of our in-person attendance is Latino, is Hispanic. And then we have some African-American, we have some Asian-American. We love it because we look like our community, and we believe the church should look like our community. And so Brighton Betty looks like our community. She's fluent in English, knows some Spanish, and has all kinds of other attributes, including appreciates a good cocktail. We know this about Betty. We know this because if you walk in here on a weekend, you can look around, and when you know this persona, you can spot Brighton Betty everywhere. She's all over the place here. Now, you might be thinking, why are you targeting a woman? Because isn't the man supposed to be the spiritual head of the household? Shouldn't you try to win the man? But here's the reality. Decisions about the family, decisions about the household, decisions about those are made by the woman in the household. And I can, from 100% experience, I've been married for 20 years. My wife is in tune with what my kids need, and I have three sons. You'd think I would know, but I don't. She's in tune with what my kids need far more than I am. She worries about their whole person and their whole being far more than I do. She's the one that's going to go, hey, our kids need to be in church. Our kids need something more. There's something more to this life than going to work, coming home, playing golf, you know, doing all of those things. Because as men, and men think you'll admit this. We're compartmentalizers. I have this bucket of things to do, I have this bucket of things to do, and I have this bucket of things to do, and nothing else even enters our mind for the most part. We check these things off, all done. And then we wake up the next morning and we do the same thing over and over and over again, and men will do that over and over and over again. Especially unchurched men who don't know Jesus. They have a life pattern laid out and they're perfectly content to follow that life pattern, and they're very resistant to adding anything to that. So we speak to Brighton Betty. Guys, men's clothes are marketed to women. They don't look like women's clothes, but they are marketed to women. So when Brighton Betty comes into the door and Brighton Bob comes with her, we don't make this place, you know, we don't have, women, you're going to be offended, I'm sorry, but we don't have flowers and frilly, I mean, we don't, obviously. When Bob comes in the door, we speak to Bob. This is a place that Bob can be really comfortable being. And it's also a place that, oh, I'm trying to think of B names for their kids. I already used Betty. Billy and, anyway, they bring their kids.
Blake.
Brandy, yeah. They bring their kids, and their kids have a great time. They bring their teenagers to our student ministry, and they have a great time. And all of a sudden, you've reached the whole family because we spoke to Betty, because Betty's the one that's out there worrying about the overall health and condition of her family. So that's why we do that. So we think we know Betty pretty well. She's a person in our community who is very much like those we've already reached. And that's one thing I would challenge you guys to do if you haven't done it. Take a look around your ministry. Take a look around the building. Take a look around where you meet on a weekend or whenever you meet, and look at the people that have been reached by your ministry. What do they have in common? There might be age, it might be ethnicity, it might be hobbies, but there are unifying characteristics of the people that you have reached, which tells you you're good at reaching those kind of people. And those kind of people are all around your community. So if you're good at reaching those kind of people, take that into your digital strategy and reach those kind of people that aren't already connected with your ministry. So defining her shapes how we develop our reach content, from the topics that we create or that we talk about, to the tone we use, to the type of content we're gonna put out there, whether it's video or blog posts, to the platform we're gonna deliver it on. Because Betty spends a lot of time on Facebook, Betty spends a lot of time on Instagram. So we saturate those a lot with articles, with video clips, with pictures, with all of those things. So, questions so far on personas. If I had to ask you, if you could boil down the people you've reached in your ministry, can you come up with a common set? Do they look like Brighton Betty, or do they look different? Anyway, yeah. So, what do they look like in your context?
So, it's a mixture of male and female, but we're talking like late 20s, early 40s.
Yeah.
Families, right?
Yeah.
That's who we're primarily reaching, and they're coming out of the LDS faith.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a lot different, but the demographics are way different.
Yeah. And that's the key to your strategy, is figuring out those demographics, figuring out the challenges, the triggers, and the things they respond to. So that's the beautiful thing about a digital ministry strategy. It can be crafted for any ministry. You know who you're reaching. That's good. Thank you, Tom.
Yeah.
Who else?
We're 30 to 50s with family.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're a little late.
Yeah.
Sorry.
What area of town are you?
We're up in the mountains, Conifer.
Okay. Yeah. So, but there are more people outside the church that look just like the people that you've reached inside your church.
That's our community.
Yeah.
That's
our neighborhood. So, part of what you can do in a digital ministry strategy exercise is talk to some of those people within your church that you've reached. Why did you give the church a try? What was it that attracted you to the church? church? What was it that made you take a step closer to God and ultimately end up connecting in community here? And be able to figure those things out, because you'll be able to identify the challenges and the triggers and the things that they responded to in order to do that. And then you can package that kind of content and reach outside the walls with it. Who else? Who are you reaching? What is your target persona look like?
I'll speak up. I'm usually the guy that says what nobody wants to say. I don't like who we're reaching.
Yeah.
This is a struggle for me, because
okay.
I would say that we're 40s professionals, churched people,
okay.
who have shopped around and landed with us.
Okay.
And that's not who we want to be reaching.
Right.
We want to change Bright and Betty to a more reflective of our neighborhoods
yeah.
and of the people around the church, not the ones that we're already yeah. reaching.
Are there people in your church that you have reached that look more like what you want to reach in your community?
Very, very few. That,
yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, there are, sure,
yeah.
but very, very few. If you're saying give a persona of who we've reached, well,
yeah. yeah. It's other church people.
It's other church people.
Yeah.
It really is, man.
Yeah.
And so we're actually, as a church, going through that right now and figuring out, like, this isn't, you know, not to go too far out, I wrote a paper on evangelism, and I realized that my number one problem with evangelism was that I hang out with too many Christians.
Yeah. Amen.
And so we're trying to change that.
Yeah. That's great. I'm glad God's leading you to that, because there's a whole lost world out there, especially here in the West. Like I said, the base culture is not Christian. We're in a lot of ways post-Christian here in the West. Well, I shouldn't say, but we're almost pre-Christian here in the West, whereas like the Northeast is post-Christian. So there's a lot of opportunity out there, because, and digital ministry is the way, one of the ways that we can get our message outside the walls in ways that people will pay attention to. This goes into far more detail in your packets. There's even a persona worksheet in there for you that if you decide you want to undertake either who we're good at reaching or who we would like to be reaching and be able to talk to people who fit more of that profile. Because again, the answer can't be everybody. We want to reach everybody. Because when we speak to everybody, we truly don't speak directly to anybody.
I can give an example that's in the works right now. I'm not
yeah.
formally in an active role in ministry right now, but I have a 4-year Bible degree, and for the past 15 years, I've been the in-home private nanny for military families, doctor
okay.
families, so high-end, high-achieving parents, nominal Christians,
yeah.
and their kids are going into public school. So I see every day the mundane, day-to-day stuff,
yeah.
and I know that these parents maybe want their kids in school, but they don't send them to Christian school or private school, or even have time to go to church if they're military, they're traveling, or deployed, or doing drill.
Yeah.
So I saw a need, and over the past couple of years, I feel like, what if I could create some content for the 5- and 6-year-olds
yeah.
as they're learning to read, mm-hmm. teach them Scripture
that's awesome.
And sight words and phonics, and
that's
then
awesome.
Expand it for 14-year-olds and then for 20-year-olds, so
yeah.
that no matter who else in their family, they can have the same Bible content to go through,
yeah.
but then at different developmental stages to bring the family together and connect them to maybe someone else in their family, maybe an aunt or a grandparent,
yeah.
to walk through that with them.
That's awesome. That's
to connect
a great
them.
Idea.
So that's why I'm
yeah.
here today.
That's a great idea. That's a great idea. So we got to start with who. We got to know who we're talking to, because that's going to shape our content. And you've started with who? Whether it's a 5-year-old or a 14-year-old or an 18-year-old, you've started with who?
Oh, for the love of the parents, because I'm taking care of the kids, but I did this job because I want to reach the parents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. So developing the strategy. So once we know who we're talking to, how do we get this person to engage? Because this person likely isn't going to walk through the doors of the church on a weekend morning. They're out there in the community. They're living their life. So what we do is we pick topics that hit the challenges and the triggers of that target persona. So Bright and Betty has certain challenges and triggers. She has a family. She has young kids. She has a husband. She has a career. She has immense time pressure. She always feels like she's not doing enough, that she's not raising her kids in the way that she wants to raise them. Those are her challenges. Her triggers are either a crisis, you know, a kid, teenager gets in trouble, or husband does something that he shouldn't do, or that it's generally some sort of crisis that shakes the day-to-day routine. So those challenges and triggers, we try to create content around those challenges and triggers. For instance, we have a blog post that says that the title is Divorce, the Final Answer, ? Now, you'd think as a church, we would say, don't get divorced, you know. But we want to reach Betty with what she's thinking. Now, the article goes on to talk about how divorce is not the final answer and that there is another way. But that we push out there, and it's intriguing. We have another one that says, what marriage counseling taught me about making marriage last. And it was actually the first blog article we ever wrote coming into the COVID season. And it's our most clicked on blog article by that not interested and spiritually curious segment. Practical things like that, things that everybody has issues with that fit in your target persona. You know, we could push out, this is what the Bible says about X, Y, or Z. But as Andy Stanley would say, our culture doesn't really care about what the Bible says anymore. The Bible to the outside world is not the final authority that it is to us in the church. So when we go out there and say, the Bible says this, but if we can go out there and say, hey, I know you're having some issues in your marriage, in your parenting, in your finances, in your work, in all of these things, and you know what? There's hope, because here's what God says about that in the Bible. Then we can, it's the same content, it's a different entry point into the conversation. So what's our goal as a result of that engagement? So we have to figure out how we're going to get them to engage. We have to figure out what our goal is as a result of the engagement. We're not putting stuff out there just to be on, oh, wow, we got 100 views of this blog last week. No, it filters. What's the goal? And we have different goals, and you'll see in the strategy grid as we go forward, we're a lot more about transformation than we are about information. So we don't just push out, here's what the Bible says. We're about people taking next steps in their discipleship, whatever that step may be, from not interested to spiritually curious, from spiritually curious to coming to a weekend service and giving their life to Jesus, to being discipled, to ultimately becoming a leader or a disciple maker. What content will we develop to achieve this goal? That is always the big challenge, because there's so many things we can do with technology today. We could produce full-length videos, we can do video clips. Should I do a 10-second thing on TikTok, or should I do a one-hour thing on YouTube, or should I write a blog article, should I publish an ebook, should I do a podcast, should all of those things. And I would say this, who you're talking to will tell you what content you need to develop. Because if Bright and Betty doesn't listen to podcasts, we don't need to create a podcast. But if Bright and Betty will read a 300-word blog article as she's scrolling through social media, then we need to write 300-word blog articles. That's what we need to do. You can't say a whole lot in 300 words, but you can draw people in to deeper content from that. So what content will we develop? Where do we deliver or promote this content? Because it's not enough to just develop content. We have to let people know it's out there. And again, who you're talking to is going to tell you where you need to promote this content, what channels. We think website, blog, app, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, instead of sanctuary, classroom, living room in this kind of content. Now, this kind of content can enhance those other environments, and we'll talk about that here in a minute. When do we publish? When do we post? I'll say this, done is better than perfect.
Yep.
Done is better than perfect. There's some perfectionists in the room, I'm sure. I don't want to put anything out there that I don't think is just absolutely perfect. Done is better than perfect. and be consistent. That's what I'd say. We've tried all kinds of different stuff, from full on, we filmed a video podcast episode with me, Pastor Doug, Marcial, our Spanish pastor, and one other guy on staff. We called it Bibles, Beers, and Bros. And we went to a brewery downtown, Raices, and they let us set up and film, and we had four cameras, and we had boom mics, and we had all these things, and we filmed this hour-long episode of us sitting around with a beer in front of us talking about the Bible and what the Bible says about alcohol. Tremendous amount of production and effort. It got about 25 views and about 50 people in the church going, I can't believe you did this. Like, okay, maybe that wasn't where we should have started, you know. But the point there is, generally simple is better than complicated. Generally good is better than perfect, because you're never gonna publish perfect. So when do we publish? Be consistent. Just be consistent. Get content out there and be consistent about it. And then finally, what do we measure to determine effectiveness? Because I'm an executive pastor. I measure everything. That's what I do. Some of you in this room hate numbers, and you're like, I don't know. I would say this. If it's important to your strategy, if it's important to your mission, measure it. So I don't care how many 3-second Facebook video views we get. Because in my mind, a 3-second Facebook video view does nothing for our mission. But a blog article about marriage that gets read and then clicked through to some more deeper content, that means something to me. Because that means somebody is moving. We've captured their attention. They're moving into deeper content. And they're going from not interested to spiritually curious, or spiritually curious to maybe walking through these doors to give the place a try. So if it's important to your strategy, measure. I'm not about glamour metrics. And if you'll remember in COVID, I heard so many churches say, man, we reached more people online than we ever did with weekend services. Yeah, they're measuring hits to a page, of which 80% of them bounced as soon as they got there. But they were stoked about, we had somebody from Taiwan hit our website. Yeah, probably a web crawler, you know. And I say that facetiously. We as the church have been so behind the game in this stuff that we didn't know any better. We thought that was pretty cool. And then, like I said, we went from measuring attendance to measuring attention, and then we got discouraged. So then we had to rethink digital strategy. So we're going to pull all this together. Yeah. This right here, as an executive pastor, makes me very happy. I know, it's weird, but it does. This is what we call our digital ministry strategy grid. So you have a blank one in there for your use, and then you have another one that's filled out that we use here at Orchard. Hopefully it's helpful to you. So we pull all this together. We know who we're talking to. We know which phase of the discipleship process they're in. We know our goal in that phase of the process. We know what content we're going to create. We know where we're going to promote it. We know what the call to action is, because you always have to have a call to action in your content. It drives me crazy when I see churches and companies and other people publish content, and then there's no ask to do anything outside of engaging with that content. So there's always got to be a call to action. So for us, here's Brighton Betty. She's not interested. We get her attention with felt need content. Marriage, parenting, self-improvement, self-help, relationships, and work. We do blog articles, and we do video clips, and those blog articles are 300-word blog articles, but they always link to a message or a video or something that lets her go deeper into what we're talking about. And then we measure those clicks. Is that person being drawn into deeper content and engagement with what we're putting out there? In the spiritually curious aspect, we give her some risk-free ways to experience what's going on here. That's where our live online services come in. That's where our online, on-demand services come in. we give her some risk-free ways to peek inside these walls and figure out what it's like to be engaged with Orchard Church. That's where I believe, or we believe, that our online services fit in this continuum as far as the discipleship strategy goes. We don't look at our online services as a destination. We look at it as a part of the process. Because where we've arrived, and I know different churches have different philosophies, so I'm not saying we've got it all figured out. We believe that it's impossible to fully disciple somebody completely online. But we believe it's impractical to expect we're going to fully disciple somebody in person. We have to do both. We have to do both. And that's where we weave the digital content, the digital tools together. So as we progress along the discipleship pathway, now we have a new believer. Our goal here is to give them some easy access to resources and digital tools for understanding their next steps in the faith. And we have something here at Orchard that we call Growth Track. So before COVID, we did maybe what some of you used to do or do. One thing I think is relatively unique about Orchard here is Pastor Doug gets a gospel invitation at the end of every single message, every single service, and a chance to respond. So we went from indicate that you said yes to Jesus on your connection card to, hey, take that card to the I said yes booth in the lobby and somebody will be there to talk with you and pray for you and all of these things. And we saw a very, very minimal response to any of that stuff. And people who did respond, they responded in that moment and then it was like, well, what do they do now? So we developed during COVID what we call Growth Track. Growth Track is a series of 5 online on-demand videos filmed at Pastor Doug and Shelley's kitchen table where they explain the decision of faith that you just made. They talk about what it means to be engaged in a church. They talk about what it means to grow as a disciple, to getting involved in groups, to being baptized, to getting involved in serving team, to living on mission, to all of those things. And we've set it up in a way that the person registers for it, so we get their information. We match them up in the background with a what we call a Growth Track guide. So it's not just online, but we know that once somebody progresses past a certain point in Growth Track, okay, that person is serious about growing in this. So Growth Track guide then reaches out to them, says, I'm here for any questions, anything you might have. I'd love to meet you. Let's go to starting point together. Let's do all of those, you know, next steps. I'll be there to guide you along the way. Because what we figured out at our scale is we can't do one-on-one with everybody, but we can do one-on-one or one-on-a-few with those people who are really serious about growing in their relationship with Jesus. So Growth Track.
What's the entry gain for that again?
For Growth Track?
So yeah, how do they know?
Where we promote that is every single service after the gospel invitation, we call so we have an opening host moment at church and a closing host moment, and that closing host moment, the first thing we talk about is if you just said yes to Jesus today, we're so excited for you. Our role as a church is to come alongside you and help you navigate that newfound walk of faith. And the way we do that in this moment is called Growth Track. Growth Track's online, on demand. You can access it right through the Orchard Church app. And so we have QR codes on the back of the seats. They can scan and download the Orchard Church app. They can engage right there with Growth Track, or they can go to orchard.church/growth track right there. They can do that right there in that moment. That's how we work digital into the in-person. And so for that step. So in-person host moments, online host moments, we do a separate host moment video for our online services because the steps can look a little bit different. You're not going to go out to the lobby to the Next Steps corner if you're watching online. Yes, sir.
I just wonder what kind of response you got to that as far as people actually using it.
Yeah, so we measure Growth Track enrollments and we measure engagements past the first episode. A lot of people will just sign up because they're curious, but if they'll watch past that first episode, we consider them engaged. So we get about 4 to 5 people a week that engage past episode 1 in Growth Track. Now we have, and I'm not trying to make this sound boastful, but we have an average of about 60 people a week say yes to Jesus in our services. So it's less than 10% that end up engaging in Growth Track in that way. But when we were doing Indicate on your connection card or stop by the I Said Yes booth, we got about 1%. So we're 8 times more efficient than we were at that. So we promote these in message mentions, serving huddles, opt-in email, paid social, organic social, Orchard app, and website. That's creating that content in that way. So on to being discipled. At Orchard, we call it discipleship. We call it next steps. Because discipleship is a really churchy word. And we don't reach a real churchy audience, so we call it next steps. So even there, we do digital content in combination with in-person to help people understand what that step is, to give them a way to decide to take that step. So even for an in-person group, we push out blog articles to all of our Facebook followers. Because I think the misunderstanding in some circles is that, well, if they follow you on Facebook, they'll see everything you post organically. It's less than 10% for us that actually see it organically, unless we put money behind it. God bless you, Mark Zuckerberg. Unless we put money behind it, people aren't going to see it. So we do paid social to our own Facebook followers on next steps, whether that's growth track, whether that's starting point, whether that's small groups, whether that's being engaged in a serving team, whether that's joining the church as a member, or ultimately into leadership. We push all of those out. We have a series of blog articles. We call them the why articles. Why baptism? Why small groups? Why serve? All of those that they can go in, and then they link to messages where we've talked about those things. So if they want to go a little bit deeper in their understanding, they can. And then the call to action is join a team or join a group or sign up for baptism or enroll in growth track.
So you said you push out to Facebook followers. Do you do that for Twitter followers, other media?
We do Facebook and Instagram for the most part. Our Twitter was never really popular, and I think it's because Brian Betty's not on Twitter for the most part.
Right. Yeah.
So Facebook and Instagram.
Nobody's on Twitter. Just the mean
people. Just the mean people are on Twitter. But we also feature it in our weekly emails. They go out to our church email list. We talk about next steps all the time. And then we, obviously talk about it in person, in our host moments, and our in-person serving huddles, and our in-person, in groups. We talk about serving and serving. We talk about groups. We talk about baptism in both of them. So we push all of that out this way. And then ultimately, onto Disciple Maker, again, we want to give them easy access to leadership development resources and digital tools to grow their ability to disciple and to lead others. So we have blog articles, we have right now media, Bible studies, and we're working on what we're calling Leadership Track, which is really kind of Growth Track 2.0 for the person who has moved to wanting to disciple others.
Did you say right now media?
Yeah.
How are you using?
We use Right Now Media in a couple of different ways. We have small groups that do things centered around Right Now Media, whether it's online or in-person groups that do that. We have curated content for our leadership development phases. So if somebody wants to move from a team member to a team leader in a specific ministry, our ministry directors have picked different Right Now Media content that might be helpful for them. For that. So we use Right Now Media in that so that, again, they can engage on their own time. They don't have to show up here to a classroom for a leadership training class. You know, they can engage on their own time, and then we can have one-on-one conversations with those people as they progress.
So, Ryan, do you track progress through Growth Track and Right Media things by your church management software, or is it a separate?
Yeah, there's, so we
without
use...
violating people's privacy, though.
Sure. No, we use a, for Growth Track, we use a system called HubSpot. Some of you guys might be familiar with HubSpot. HubSpot is a very robust platform. You can make it as simple or as easy as you want to. It can be a simple CRM, or it can be far more than that. And so Growth Track videos are in our HubSpot platform. When a person registers, they agree that we can communicate with them and that they accept cookies, and we are tracking. So we do have that disclaimer on there. But we know when they've registered, we know when they've downloaded the booklet, we know when they've engaged in a video. And if, honestly, in HubSpot, it progresses those people all the way through different stages of what HubSpot calls a sales pipeline.
And I know that almost even sounds sacrilegious to say it that way, but it's really just tracking people through a process. So we know who's at which episode. We even have automated reminders that come from their growth track guide. So if they're stuck at a certain episode for a few days, it just pings an email that says, hey, how's it going with growth track? Or, you know, keep going with growth track, some encouragement there. So we don't have to have somebody sitting down and typing an email every time they want to reach out to somebody. So we've used those kinds of digital tools for growth track. We do use CCB as our church management system. We've had pretty good luck reading info from CCB into HubSpot, but not reverse writing from HubSpot into CCB. CCB is pretty protective in their API about writing to it. You can read from it all day long, but it's tougher to write to it.
Do you have any plans to switch to something else?
I get asked that question.
Like Planning Center.
Yeah, exactly, especially from our...
Because we're using CCB too, but we constantly have the debate. Should we go over to Planning Center?
Yeah.
Because it's got that capability more.
Yeah, exactly. And we've looked at Rock, we've looked at Planning Center Online. Our worship and production team uses Planning Center Online for all their scheduling, so of course they're big fans of it. That's just such a big decision.
Mm-hmm. It is, yeah.
When you start integrating giving and, you know, all of those things, that I would love to switch, but I'm fearful of the cost of doing so.
Yep.
It costs a lot. And the analytical side of Planning Center, actually, just being candid, sucks.
Oh, really?
It's not my favorite.
Yeah.
Again, I love our worship industry. I'm working in the area of worship and technology right now, so it's super awesome for that. I mean,
yeah.
But when you get into actual analytics and stuff, it's just not as good as some of the other things.
Yeah. What I love about HubSpot is they give you very detailed analytics about website visits and blog post views and actions people took.
Are you saying HubSpot or HubSpot?
Hub, H-U-B.
It's
on the back page.
Yeah, there's a list of resources on the back page for you. The other great thing about HubSpot is even if you aren't a HubSpot subscriber, they have HubSpot Academy, which goes through a lot of different content marketing principles and how to do things. Of course, they're telling you, you know, that it's so much easier to do it on their platform, but there's still some great knowledge there. All right, for our next 5 minutes, what questions do you have?
Forgive my ignorance. On the things we measure, there's FTG?
First time guess. Sorry, time that's guess. An internal acronym.
Okay.
First time guess.
First time guess. Second, being new in a lot of this, I'm hearing all these different platforms and all these different ways you guys are reaching. And quite honestly, it feels very overwhelming to, I mean, does each person manage each one of those things? How do you maintain unity in message that's being sent out when you've got all these different platforms and even different, you can only interact in certain ways on certain platforms.
Right.
So that sounds like a huge, huge undertaking.
Yeah.
Is it, or am I overthinking it?
No, you're right on, but it doesn't have to be that way. That's the beautiful thing about the strategy is you can start with it as simple as you want. Say, hey, we're going to focus on Facebook, and we're going to come up with a content plan of we're going to do 3 posts a week targeting this person. We're going to pay to push out to an audience that we can define. That's a great thing about Facebook is you can define really targeted audiences there. So you can keep it that simple to where one person can have control over that whole process.
It depends on who's writing the Medicaid, right? What platform is she on?
Right, exactly.
That's one we use.
Yep. So Brighton Betty's on Instagram, Brighton Betty's on Facebook, that's where we focus the most. We've been a little behind on YouTube. We're just starting to put some more attention into that instead of just treating it as a place you can go watch a video. But your point is, ours is complex because we've grown it over time and we went, and I'm an entrepreneur by nature, so I'm like, hey, here's a problem, here's how we can solve it, let's bolt this piece on. And here's a problem over here, here's how we can solve it, let's bolt this piece on. So it's become much more, what's that? Yeah, exactly. And so it becomes more difficult to manage. But that's why we use HubSpot to kind of bring all that stuff together in one place where we can measure and we can push content and we can see our ad spend and we can see all of those things.
I would say too, it's really helpful when you're first
you're starting out, once you figure out your target audience and who you're trying to push for, to know whatever platform that is inside and out. Like, spend your time focused on the one platform that's going to be the most reach.
Yeah.
And then, and especially if it's like Facebook, because like even now on Facebook, you can schedule posts like way out.
Yep.
So then when you're starting to learn your next platform, you can kind of put Facebook on an automatic thing. And not put it on the back burner, but you don't have to pay as much attention while you're learning the next one.
Yeah.
And build into it.
Yep. No, no, when Facebook came out with the planner, that was huge. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So great.
So I know that's kind of the issue with, that's the beauty and the downside of digital ministry is there, you can do so much. And that's why strategy is so important. Because generally how digital ministry starts is somebody in the church knows how to do something, so let's do that. And then, well, did it work, did it not work? We don't know. You know, there somebody walked in, I don't know why. You know, having that strategy, knowing what a win is, and then being able to measure against it is so important.
Your cost per first-time guest metric, what do you measure?
We measure total ad spend, both traditional and digital. So, for instance, we do some new mover mailers. We do a billboard out here on I-76. We're in the local Brighton Buzz magazine for big events, and then Facebook ad spend, Google search spend, and any other spend we might do in a given week, and simply divide that by the number of first time guests that show up.
Can you tell us what that
varies widely? Where we are right now for the year is on average we're at about $3.80 per first time guest, and that's registered for somebody that actually walked in the door and checked in. We average about 50 to 60 first-time guests, so we're spending a couple $100 a week on that stuff.
Do you, just out of curiosity, do you have a number for return guests?
That's a tough one because we don't track second-time visitors. We could dig into CCB and look at kid check-ins and, you know, that sort of thing. We do measure group engagement by. So we know who's new to groups, we know who's actually come a couple of times in groups that were never in a group before, but as far as weekend attendance, there's really no, we've not found a practical way to say, hey, if it's your second time here, do this. You know, we've tried some things, but they never have any momentum.
Achievement badges.
Yeah, chief badges.
Starbucks, like,
we did actually
get your 10th visits free.
When somebody left the first time, we gave them a card with a QR code, said, bring it back next time, scan the QR code, get a free t-shirt. I think we gave away 2 t-shirts in a month. So, yeah, it just, I don't know, it's tough. So what we do is we measure weekly attendance, and we know that if that's growing, then people are coming back. What else? You guys hungry yet?
How many people do you have on your team? Like this team?
This team?
Like online with the meeting?
Right now there are 2 of us on staff. And this isn't my only, I'm the executive pastor, this is my only job, but I oversee it. We have a communications coordinator who she pushes out most of our organic Facebook, social media stuff. I run the kind of paid ad strategy side. I run the HubSpot side of things. Then we have a contract copywriter in South Africa. And so what I do is on Monday morning, I give her our message notes and a link to the message video. I say, I want a 300-word blog article about this topic. Targeted at Brian and Betty, attached to persona. I mean, she should know it by heart by now, but, and 4 or 5 days later, I've got it. Just a couple of tweaks and edits, formatted HubSpot, push it out there. $15 for her to do that for me, every single week. Yeah, and so, one of the resources I put on the back was, I believe, Fiverr. That's where I found her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Fiverr. All kinds of people out there that'll write that kind of content. You'll have to go through a few,
Because we went through a couple that I'm like, not our style. But she first came back, I'm like, oh yeah, no, she understands who we're trying to reach and how we're trying to talk. So we feed her every week, basically.
So how about you and the people that do the video and
so yeah, our production team, we do have a multimedia director that does all of our video. We do have as far as our church online stuff, we have a whole broadcast setup that has a different mix audio-wise and that sort of thing, and our production team runs that. Our multimedia guy stays here Saturday night after service, you know, because we record our Saturday night service for broadcast on Sunday, so we can put those online host moments before and after it, so we can speak directly to the online person. They film all of those on Saturday night, and then he's here till midnight, sandwiching all that together and uploading it to our streaming platform. We use OneStream to be able to stream live to Facebook, the pre-recorded stuff. And then we do the church online platforms. So what we have found is putting it out there on Facebook and YouTube helps people that aren't already engaged with the church maybe discover us. But our people, because we support our church online platform with a live chat host and a prayer person that can interact, and our people prefer to engage on that platform.
So you don't have a host on Facebook or YouTube?
We do on Facebook, we don't on YouTube
okay. Right
now.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. That's what, we've been a little behind the curve on YouTube.
I don't either. We do host on Facebook and church online.
Yeah.
You guys get a lot of interaction with those hosts or the prayer stuff?
On the Church Online platform, we get more than we do on Facebook. Okay. Yeah. Because Facebook, Church Online is a destination. People are going there to watch a service.
Yeah.
Facebook, they're scrolling through social media, it pops up, they're like, okay. And they keep going. So we have a lot more interaction. I don't know what your guys' experience.
It depends. It depends on the week, it depends on what's going on.
Yeah.
There's some weeks that Facebook can blow up. There's some weeks that it's crickets. And it's the same on Church Online.
Yeah.
And it depends on which service. I'd say our 9 versus our 10:30 is more active.
Yeah.
I feel like the 10:30 people are the ones that are standing, like peeking in the door. They don't want to be noticed.
Yeah.
Or sitting in the back.
So I
would say it just depends on what people are. But I do have regular people that show up on Facebook, which is amazing. I think Church Online would be a better experience, but it might just be the pop-up reminder, hey, church is going.
Right.
Hop on.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
Well, and we push through our app. We push a push notification out every Sunday morning at 9 when that's online, because they can just go on the app and watch it.
And I would say, to your point, probably more female. I can't think of a guy.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they may like it, but I can't think of a guy that's commented on Facebook. I think it's usually all females.
That's interesting.
So I'd say Church Online. I have guys that comment, but not on Facebook.
We know our Facebook audience is 72% female. YouTube's a little different.
Yeah.
But again, it's harder, I think a lot harder to get interaction.
Yeah.
Yep. So we tried to direct the church on my platform.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they make it easier or not. But what do you think we can do? We stream Facebook together. We get interaction on Facebook from a lot of people generally. YouTube's not super friendly to that, the chat aspect of things.
Yeah.
But I'm just curious what it is that you see benefit of the church on platform.
Well, we were using that platform before COVID. And so rather than, and we were also streaming to Facebook before COVID. When we went to focus a lot more on the online service, we built out that church online platform because we knew we needed to support it with chat hosts. We needed to support it with people to pray for people. We felt like that was a better venue than on Facebook to do that. So part of it is we're doing it because that's what we were doing, and part of it is we do believe it's a little bit more conducive to actual interaction with because you have the private prayer, that people can do one-on-one. And I know Facebook, you can kind of do that through Messenger and that sort of thing, it's not very good.
Can I jump in on that?
Yeah, of course.
So it depends on if you're looking to build community online and actually connect with people, especially your congregants. Church Online is really good for that. Like he said, you can have direct chat. They've added in a feature you can see who's showing up through that audience if they create a username. You also have, you need to saddle with a host if you're going to try to build community that way. Yes. If you're not, if you're just streaming, it's a waste. Yeah. But if you're actually streaming and wanting to build interaction between your people, then that's probably a I find it a better platform than Facebook, because you can have some of those benefit features of, and we average probably a prayer chat once a week at least.
Yeah.
If not some weeks, depending on the topic, you'll get a bunch.
And it's a great serving opportunity for people to be able to do it. Yes.
So who manages the church online and the Facebook engagement and YouTube when you are live streaming all of these?
Yeah, so YouTube we don't support with a chat host at all. It's just, you can go there and watch it. Facebook and church online is, the volunteers for that are managed by our guest services team, the same people that would have, you know, if somebody walked in a door, you know, to be greeted and to be talked to, they schedule those volunteers. Any technical issues we might have goes to our production team.
So I'm assuming you have a lot of volunteers.
It takes about, just between in person and online, it takes about 200 volunteers a weekend here. Yeah, it's a lot to manage. So I suggest start simple, start with what you can do. If you're just starting, start simple. But to Mike's point, if you truly want to build community online, you've got to support it with volunteers or even staff members that will. During COVID, we did it with staff members. Post, you know, when we returned to in-person, I banned the phrase, go back to in-person. We're not going back to anything. When we return to in person, we ended up staffing that with volunteers because our staff is a little busy at that point.
Yeah, to give you a number of comparison, I think our church is probably 500 to 1,000. I don't know. And we probably 5 to 10 volunteers to run our tech and our volunteer online.
Yeah.
So it's totally small, like much smaller than what they're running.
Yeah. And to your point, there are a lot of things you can automate. You know,
that's what we've been doing.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of stuff now too, like I do graphic design, which is a great asset for church planting. But I hire out and subscribe to content, but I don't have to waste my time doing it.
Yeah.
Because I got a million other things I gotta do. And so like you can subscribe to places like Sunday Social and Church Media Squad and they'll create all your content for you. And some of them will even schedule posts.
Yeah.
So you literally just like mark and check the boxes, approve it, and go. And some of those posts we get more engagement on than the stuff that we push out ourselves.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, there are all kinds of ways to outsource.
Yes.
And a lot of it's more affordable than you might think.
Yeah.
If you haven't looked into it. But my encouragement, I'm going to leave you with this. Start with strategy. Otherwise, you're throwing stuff at the wall to see if it'll stick, and you can waste volunteers' time and their bandwidth and goodwill. You can waste money. You can waste all those things. You got to know who you're going after and how you're going to reach it. And that is for every phase of that discipleship process. So understand what you want them to do, what the goal of an engagement is, and figure out how to best get it done. Well, thank you all. Let me pray for you before you leave.
You need help with the chairs.
But I don't know. Oh, yeah, there's the rack. Yeah, that would be great if we could pull up chairs. Yeah, that would be fantastic. Thank you. God, we're grateful. Thank you so much for these women and men in this room. God, thank you what you're doing in and through them, through their ministries. God, we know there's a lost world out there, and we know you love each and every person out there. God, let us reflect that love in everything that we do. God, help us to have wisdom and the courage and the endurance and the strength to do all the things that we can do to reach the world around us. God, I pray for great ideas. I pray you'd open the windows of heaven and just pour out inspiration on all of us. And Lord, we look forward to the good report of people coming to know you and to grow in you through the efforts of these. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you all. Greatly appreciate it.